You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, Carly McCord.
What's happening?
Showing that
there?
LSU pride. Well, she's Mike Lombardi walked by. Carly does a lot of work also with our scouting department in addition to helping us out here. Megan Rock also helps out here. We are very fortunate. We get a lot of helping hands. But she's rocking the LSU jersey today, the pride of LSU, her school, and her, you know, this is Louisiana native and North.
G-E-A-U-X.
And she says G-E-A-U-X Browns, G-E-A-U-X Tigers, G-E-A-U-X Saints. It's a lot of G-E-A-U-X. And she's trying to convert people to understand that spelling and that what it's how it's pronounced. And some people, it's a little struggle for some. Some want to say Gux.
It's not. It's go. Dave, you got it, don't you?
Yeah, I have it. I understand.
It's that Cajun thing.
Also,
right.
the alma mater of the Browns' first-round pick this year, Barkevious Mingo.
Mingo, that's
Kiki
right.
Kiki Mingo.
That's right.
Kiki Mingo.
And it's M-I-N-G-E-A-U-X. In case nobody knew.
In case we didn't know
that.
In
case they didn't get that.
Thank you,
yes.
Carly, for that. We really
are you going to make up a special 51 jersey with that on the back?
You know, at LSU, his family, that was what their jersey said on the back. And that's what everybody's sign said, too. So it was Mingo, M-I-N-G-E-A-U-X. So I should get a Cleveland Browns jersey and spread the word and start the trend.
You might know some people around here who could get you a jersey.
Yeah, I think so. We might know
someone.
You're in the right place. Might know someone.
All right, it's Friday forecast. Thank you, Carly, for that. It's Friday forecast time.
Yes.
Something we love to do. This, too, is sweeping the nation, much like after further review that we do on Tuesdays. Dave DiNatale, our outstanding producer, take it away, Dave.
Yeah, let's have at it here. Before we start the countdown, I need the two of you to call your shot on the other AFC North game of the weekend. That would be the Ravens playing host to the New York Jets. Remember, the Bengals have a bye this weekend.
I think Ravens are going down. I think the Jets will rebound. And even though they've got issues, serious issues at quarterback, I see this. I don't know. I just look at this Ravens team, and you finally sold me on the idea that I can't depend on them either, or their
you definitely
especially
can't
their
depend
quarterback.
On Joe Flacco.
That's
that
right.
Is true.
So he's gonna Flacco his way out of that one. I'm just gonna. I know it's wishful thinking, but I'm just gonna say the Jets with their defense might be able to do something. I know you're gonna pick the Ravens.
I'm going to pick the Baltimore Ravens in an ugly game. And in an ugly game, obviously, any team
can
win.
Happen, right?
I will say that. But I'm going to go Baltimore Ravens 13-6. Geno Smith.
Oh, okay. So that's a hopeful score for the Jets.
Yeah.
That means the Jets can stumble their way to something there.
I don't believe very much in the Ravens offense against the Jets' number one ranked run defense. But Geno Smith completed exactly 8 passes in each of his last 2 games. And the Ravens, to their credit, are a much better defense at home. And that's where they play their next 3 games, starting this one with the Jets. And they start with a victory 13-6.
G-E-A-U-X Jets.
Number 4.
That was good.
That was very good. As we start the kind of the path to victory watch here for the Browns against the Steelers, are you more concerned about shutting down Antonio Brown, or are you more concerned about Heath Miller, because he always seems to be a thorn in the Browns' side, catching passes over the middle and especially also in the red zone?
Well, I'm more concerned about Brown. I'm more concerned about Brown's speed, and I don't know if the Browns, and especially when they move him around formation a little bit, see what Todd Haley does with that. But even when he's lined up against Joe Hayden, who's been masterful, who's been tremendous, but he's got a history where this guy has also beaten him on big plays. And I just think Brown is the factor that I worry about the most. I worry about Ben Roethlisberger, the guy throwing the ball. But I think Brown, unfortunately, is a guy that he's probably going to have a play. He's probably going to have that one or two big plays that the Browns are going to have to overcome.
I think Joe Hayden is playing well enough that he is going to be able to contain Antonio Brown and keep him down. To me, the guy that I'm most worried about, Jericho Cotchery in the red zone, who has 7 of Big Ben Roethlisberger's 11 red zone passing touchdowns this year. That is important to me, that he is able to stop him. It is also important to me that they limit Heath Miller. We saw Jermaine Gresham score, Alex Smith 2 tight end touchdowns last week. We saw JerMichael Finley score on them. We've seen 3 touchdowns to Joseph Fourier. So to me, I'm more concerned with the Emmanuel Sanders, Cotchery, Heath Miller trio than I am about the opposing number one, because of the 14 passing touchdowns given up in the last 5 games by the Cleveland Browns defense, only one, that was Jordy Nelson, has been completed against Joe Haden. The other 13 have not.
He's different than Jordy Nelson, and he's different than every receiver I think he's gone up against, including A.J. Green, just because of his speed. He's got a dimension that is special, and he's been
Mike Wallace has speed.
I understand.
Similar size.
I think Brown's and Mike Wallace isn't a Steeler anymore because the Steelers like
stinks.
Brown
and they saw
what they see in Antonio Brown who will give him a problem. You just said it too. You said the red zone issues with Jericho Cotchery. You know how they're going to get in the red zone? Brown's going to help him get in the
red zone.
I'll
tell you what. Too bad the Ravens didn't have the foresight about Joe Flacco that the Steelers did about Mike Wallace.
Number four. We need to start an all stink team for Nathan
Zagurich. Give him the stink guy team.
All right, now I've built up some positive credit here with Carly McCord. I may lose some of it with this question. After watching the Saints and Falcons last night, are you convinced that New Orleans cannot win the NFC if they don't have home field advantage?
No, I think they can win the NFC minus home field advantage because I thought they just played down to the level of the Falcons and played a typical Thursday night game, which is for a lot of players, it's become a little bit of an issue or maybe a big issue where the short window to prepare for a game has watered down and brought down the quality of the play itself. And I think players shift. They've got a mode for Sunday, and I think they've got a mode. And this counts with coaches, too. I think they trim down game plans. They don't have sufficient preparation, at least in their mind. I don't think you see as good a product on Thursday as you generally do on Sunday. That's been a trend throughout most of the season. And I think the Saints just kind of wanted to get through with that game. Just get out of there, don't get anybody hurt, and go home. That they're a more explosive team than they showed there, and that's good enough to me for them to win on the road as well as at home.
I don't think they can go into Seattle and beat Seattle. And we'll get an idea, though. We'll get a little bit of a hint about that when they play, by the way, Monday Night Football next week in Seattle.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I think, to me, that's the one tough thing. If you look at Drew Brees' numbers at home and on the road, not even close. No comparison whatsoever. So we'll find out a lot about what they're able to do.
But they can win on the
physicality.
Road. I mean, they've got a win-loss. You know, their road success is good. I mean,
I think they're going to have a tough time in Seattle because you even saw Steven Jackson have his best game running the football against New Orleans, and I think that Seattle's just going to be too physical up front at the point of attack for the Saints on the road outdoors. Yes.
Number three. All right, which quarterback Sunday will be most affected by the cold weather? Will it be Campbell or Big Ben?
I'm going to say Campbell. If either quarterback is affected, a guy who's already coming in with some soreness, some real rib soreness. We've heard it from Gerard Cherry. We've heard it from any number of players. And if you've been around this league at any point and talk with players who've just been through these conditions, the biggest issue is everything hurts a lot more. And in November, December, you know, you get into the latter stage of the season, you've got aches and pains beyond the known like that. And the weather brings that out. So I worried a little bit, maybe a lot, that Jason may not be able to fully be able to let it rip and do what he needs to do, even though that is exactly what he needs to do. And for Ben's sake, you know, Ben's done this consistently, and Ben's handled this consistently. I don't know if this is going to be the same kind of weather, that incredible bone chill that we saw for that Thursday night game in Cleveland. I'm sensing it's not that, but who knows? But if that was a problem, you know, for the Steelers then. I don't know that it'll be a bigger problem, though, for them in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that either one of them. I think they might be equally affected in this game. I think that Ben Roethlisberger is going to be more impacted by the Browns' defense than anything in terms of the fact that he's thrown for more than 350 yards with four touchdowns in two of his last three games.
All right.
Number two.
By the way, credit the last question to Mark Bishop on Twitter. Not
thank
Mark,
you, Munch.
Not Munch. Yeah, which I thought was a good question.
Okay.
All right.
He did.
Here's a quote. The facts are, I really do think the way things have rolled out, I'm getting to do some of the best work that I've done, relatively speaking, in my career over these last several years. That's from Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys and GM. Gentlemen, do you agree with that statement? Is he doing the best work that he's done in
no,
his career?
I think that they have serious issues with the fact that maybe he has a little bit too much power there in Dallas, and the buck stops with him, and you'd have to look at the lack of success they've had. And I know that, yes, you could say they've had a lot of injuries, but they haven't had the depth to step up behind those injuries, and maybe they're doing something wrong in their scouting where they're drafting guys who are a little bit more prone to injury than others. No, he is not doing the best work of his career right now. The best work of his career was done when he put together the team that had, you know, Jimmy Johnson as the coach. It had Troy Aikman. It had Emmitt Smith. It had the playmaker, not to mention stud after stud on the offensive line, stud after stud on the defensive side of the ball. Those were some of the best teams ever in the early 90s.
Supremely confident guy, excellent businessman.
Great guy to be around, too.
And a wonderful guy to be around. A lot of fun to be around. And I've had that opportunity to interview him on any number of occasions and just chat with him. Most recently at the NFL owners meetings, to actually talked about Alex Shiner being the president of the Browns, who was an employee of his for like 9 seasons in Dallas. Look, I think the Cowboys, as they stand right now, are not built to I'm going to say the word dominate. They could still be built well enough to win a very bad division. How far it goes from there, I think, is a function of what they have at quarterback, which is a big question mark, named Tony Romo, and the up and down nature there. They don't have a lot of other sufficient parts. They've let parts of this team get away. I don't know that he's going to remake that model, though, and say, I'm going to stop being the guy who picks the players and put that in someone else's hands. Does he ever get to that point? Because that's the only way you're going to really know if it can be better. And that would be, by the way, can he trust someone else to do it? But he's following the Al Davis model to a T. Al Davis owned the Raiders and made every key Raider decision, and it was obviously viewed as the thing that made them great and then the thing that made them a disaster.
Right, and you wonder if it kind of follows the same model, and if, you know, we don't study history, we're doomed to repeat it, and that, you know, they did have one period of great success, and then since then it's been...
You know, you start to... You know what happens, and this, I think this is, it happens in a lot of places, not just sports, but it's very common in sports, is that when you get that championship run and you were a part of it and you know you made, or you at least you think you made a lot of the key decisions to make that happen and you were integral, you start to feel, look, I got the juice. I can make this happen. I've got the juice. And then now as time goes on, the juice gets watered down and you don't realize as years pass.
No wheeze in the juice.
This juice is just empty, so I'm not sure it's going to work anymore. It's just water. It's juiceless. What else you got for us?
Number one.
Yes, the number one, of course. Gentlemen, call your shots for Sunday. The Browns, the Steelers. Who's going to win and the path to victory?
All right, I'll start with mine. I'm going to say it is the Browns 17, Steelers 14. Path to victory. This is going to sound crazy. They're going to run the football successfully for the first time all season. And I mean, like, genuinely run, control tempo and pace. It will open up other things offensively. Jason Campbell will have less pressure on him because they're finding success running the ball. But Jason's going to make just enough plays against those slower-moving defensive backs from the Steelers. Jordan Cameron is going to have his best day in a while, which I know isn't saying a lot, but he's going to visit the end zone with the ball in his hand. And I think this team will have some success there. Not that it's going to be tight and low scoring, but I think that's how they're going to get there, and that's the score.
26-24 Browns. The Browns trail 24-23 on the final drive. Billy Cundiff field goal winner. His
how many
fourth
yards?
Field goal of the day from 38 yards.
Yes.
And the Browns win 26-24. Ben Roethlisberger will have 2 touchdowns. He will throw an interception, though, on the day. Campbell, 1 touchdown, 1 interception for him. But it's going to come down to the fact that the Browns are going to get some key sacks at key moments and run the football effectively. Actually, have the Browns running for over 100 yards in this game. The Steelers running for about 70.
All right, we need... Yeah, it was 26-24. Carly was checking your score, so she could tweet it. That's okay. Now, yep. Carly, it's your turn to call your shot.
Oh,
Carly,
this is a tough one. I'm going to have to say 27-13.
A blowout. All
right.
Browns.
Nicely done. All right. That is it, huh? We've done it. We've called our shots, and I love this segment. This is a lot of fun. We've got much more coming up. We're going to hear from Gerard Cherry in a little bit. His regular stop on this show. That is coming up for you on a Call Your Shot Friday. Still want to hear more from you, 216-578-0850. We've gotten a ton of tweets. We'll get to as many as we can of those in our final segment at Browns_Daily. Vic Carucci, Nathan Zagura, loving that you're hanging out with us. We love that we get to hang out with you right here in Berea, right in the heart of where it's all happening here for the Cleveland Browns. On Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, I'm excited. I'm drinking a lot of coffee.
You are excited. I like it. Steeler Week.